The reading this evening is from 2 Corinthians chapter 3, beginning at verse 7 to 18. This can be found on page 1159 of the Church Bibles. 2 Corinthians chapter 3, beginning at verse 7. The greater glory of the new covenant. Now, if the ministry that brought death, which was engraved in letters on stone, came with glory, so that the Israelites could not look steadily at the face of Moses because of its glory, transitory though it was, will not the ministry of the Spirit be even more glorious? If the ministry that brought condemnation was glorious, how much more glorious is the ministry that brings righteousness? For what was glorious has no glory now in comparison with the surpassing glory. And if what was transitory came with glory, how much greater is the glory of that which lasts? Therefore, since we have such a hope, we are very bold. We are not like Moses, who would put a veil over his face to prevent the Israelites from seeing the end of what was passing away. But their minds were made dull, for to this day the same veil remains when the old covenant is read. It has not been removed, because only in Christ is it taken away. Even to this day, when Moses is read, a veil covers their hearts. But whenever anyone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we all, who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory, are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit.
As a Christian, oh, hello. Try that again. As a Christian, do you look any different to anyone else? Do you feel like people even know you're a Christian? At work, at school, in the community? And even if they do they notice anything different about you? Do your friends notice your behavior, your kindness, your generosity, your care? Do they know about your faith even? Have you told them? Do you reflect God's love? Does it shine out of you? It's quite a challenging question, series of questions. And those are the questions, that's the theme that we're going to be exploring together this evening. And we're going to do so by continuing our series in 2 Corinthians, which seemed to me to be quite problematic. Because when I first read it, and for some of you, this is the first time you've seen it for a while too, I had pretty much no idea what it meant. In fact, I'm going to be honest with you, I was getting perilously close to this evening without really having a clue what Paul was going on about. And to show my hand and workings even more, Ali actually emailed me, which is what the worship leader does in the week, to the preacher, and says, which response songs would you like in response to the talk that you're giving on Sunday? And I panicked slightly and wanted to reply, can we sing I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For? Now let's take the opening two verses. We just heard them read. Now if the ministry that brought death, which was engraved in letters on stone, came with glory, so that the Israelites could not look steadily at the face of Moses because of its glory, transitory though it was, will not the ministry of the Spirit be even more glorious? Now please some of you, raise a hand and tell me, you didn't find that easy to understand either. Thank goodness for that. I mean, what does that even mean? Like, write in plain English, man. I mean, admittedly, he was a first century Jewish man writing in Greek, but you know what I mean. He goes on, verse 9. If the ministry that brought condemnation was glorious, how much more glorious is the ministry that brings righteousness? For what was glorious has no glory now in comparison with the surpassing glory. And if what was transitory came with glory, how much greater is the glory of that which lasts? I mean, it's really straightforward and simple stuff, isn't it? I'm seriously panicking at this point. I expect some of you are seriously panicking at this point too, and wondering if I can actually deliver anything of worth. I, of course, did get there in the end. But I tell you all this because I think sometimes it's helpful to demystify a little bit the role of the preacher. I don't have a theology degree. I don't have a... I'm not a vicar. I found this really difficult, and it just reminded me that so often we come to the Bible and we find it a bit tough. And maybe we don't quite know what to do with what's in front of us, and we feel a bit inferior, and maybe we put the text down. And we imagine real Christians, like the vicar, never has this problem. Phil, do you ever have this problem? Very good. He said frequently, if you didn't hear it. So I did three things you'll be pleased to hear. I first of all, I read around the passage, and I looked at the context, and I followed the one lead that we get in the text to another part of the Bible. And I asked a good friend who does understand the Bible really well to give me a bit of help. Thank you, Mr. Peck. And perhaps more importantly, I remembered that the Bible is a living book, and that the Holy Spirit does the job of making sense of it to us. And so I, you know, controversially decided, as a last resort, to spend some time with God, asking him to remove the veil from my eyes, which leads me neatly onto my discovery that in order to understand this very tricky passage, the best option was to read a completely different one. And so in verse 7, in that huge long sentence that we've just heard, Paul refers to this slightly crazy story in the Bible, which in most translations is given the title, The Radiant Face of Moses, which I think sounds like a rejected Harry Potter title. Harry Potter and the Radiant Face of Moses. Anyway, there's this story in Exodus, and it is really, really fascinating. And so we're going to leave, we're going to park this passage, which I've decided is too difficult. We're going to leave the series in 2 Corinthians, and we're going to skip back a few hundred pages to Exodus chapter 34. And I'll put it on the screen for you. You can follow along in the church Bible if you wish. Exodus 34, verses 29 to 32. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of the covenant law in his hand, so that's not the Ten Commandments, that's a load of other stuff that follows the Ten Commandments, he was not aware that his face was radiant because he had spoken with the Lord. When Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, his face was radiant, and they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called to them, so Aaron and all the leaders of the community came back to him, and he spoke to them. Afterward, all the Israelites came near him, and he gave them all the commands the Lord had given on Mount Sinai. So Moses has been up in the mountain with God, just the two of them, and Moses, as the one person who's actually allowed to do that, has collected from God the law that God wants the people to follow. And then there's this strange phenomena attached to him doing that. Moses' face literally shines like a beacon because he spent time with God. I found some brilliant images of this on the internet. There's many if you search the radiant face of Moses. There's this one. There's quite a lot of paintings. I'm not sure if that's a painting or a sort of weird composite 70s photograph, but it's interesting anyway. There's a lot of those. In fact, that he appears to have a sort of force field around him. I hadn't noticed that before. But that is Moses with his face all radiant. There's some like this, which are the sort of radiant beard of Moses variety. I don't know if that's the next great hipster trend, the radiant beard of Moses. And then my favorite as well, Lego radiant Moses as well. So hopefully that helps you to sort of imagine this slightly strange story. When Moses met with God to receive the law, the old covenant, the old way that God related to his people before Jesus, he changed in some way. So when he comes down from meeting with God, people can physically see the difference in him. He's changed in this remarkable, supernatural way. In Exodus 33, which is the chapter before this one, still up the mountain, Moses asks if he can actually see the glory of God. He asks God to see his glory. And God says, you can't do that because nobody can see my glory and live. It is too powerful. You cannot see my full glory. So what I will do, I will pass by in all my glory with you hidden safely in the cleft of a rock, with you covered by my hand. I'm not sure how he does that, sort of pass by. He's God, isn't he? And you can be hidden in the cleft of the rock as I pass by, and then you can't even look at me. I'm too glorious. You can't even look at me as I'm passing by. You can look at my back. That's what you can see and still live. That's the amount of glory that is safe for a human being to see and still survive. In fact, the original Hebrew, I am told, obviously I'm not a Hebrew scholar, the original Hebrew, a better translation actually is that you can look at the place where I have just been. So God says to Moses, you can't look at my full glory, you can't see my glory as I'm passing, you can't even look at my back, you can just about cope with seeing the place where I have just been, because I'm that glorious. And that is enough to send Moses down the mountain with this kind of crazy glowing face. Exodus 34 continues. When Moses finished speaking to them, he put a veil over his face. But whenever he entered the Lord's presence to speak with him, he removed the veil until he came out. And when he came out and told the Israelites what he had been commanded, they saw his face was radiant again. Then Moses would put the veil back over his face until he went to speak with the Lord. So there's this kind of veil thing going on with Moses where he doesn't always have, he has the radiant face, but he doesn't always show the radiant face. He covers it over constantly with a veil. Why does he do that? I found a cartoon which suggests that he had become a little bit of a distraction to the Israelites. There's a lot of theories about why he actually covered his face. One traditional understanding is that the people, it was like a kind of another version of what happened with God. The people couldn't actually stand, couldn't bear to look at Moses' face for too long, which interestingly is an issue I had in my teenage years with girls. But the passage doesn't say that. The way this bit of Exodus is written suggests that the radiance on Moses' face, stick with this, the radiance on Moses' face had a lifespan to it. It was like a battery that ran down and had to be recharged. And the Message translation of the 2 Corinthians passage says it would fade away soon enough. The NIV calls it transitory. The veil was a way for Moses to kind of disguise how recently he'd spent time with God. Because as the passage tells us, when he returns to God's presence, the radiance is reestablished. And indeed, if we look at 2 Corinthians 3, verse 13, Paul tells us Moses would put a veil over his face to prevent the Israelites from seeing the end of what was passing away. So in order to shine in such a way that he would proudly see the people with his face unveiled, Moses had to get back into the presence of God. So he'd meet with God, radiant face, veil off, time away from God, fading radiance, veil on. Make sense? Okay, now I'm ready to try and make sense of 2 Corinthians 3. So let's look at those opening words again. Oh, I've gone the wrong way. Now, if the ministry that brought death, which was engraved in letters on stones. Let's stop there for a second. Paul's talking about that passage in Exodus. He's describing the kind of relationship that God had with the people then, by proxy, through Moses, getting them to follow this series of rules. If that ministry came with glory so that the Israelites could not look steadily at the face of Moses because of its glory, transitory though it was, so this hopefully makes sense now. Paul's retelling that story of God being reflected in the face of Moses. Still with me? If even that was in its own way amazing and supernaturally glorious, will not the ministry of the Spirit be even more glorious? I.e., the new covenant, the New Testament way of relating to God after Jesus is even more extraordinary than seeing your leader's face light up like a candle. Make sense? Yes! I'm not an idiot! Okay, let's keep going. Verse 9. If the ministry that brought condemnation was glorious, that's the old covenant, where the people had to keep offering sacrifices to God to atone for their sins and couldn't know him personally. They knew him through Moses. How much more glorious is the ministry that brings righteousness? There is a new agreement in place, one through which we don't have to send Phil up a mountain to meet with God and come back with a shiny face, although we'd all like to sing that. Now we can know God personally, and that is beautifully where we join the story. For what was glorious has no glory now in comparison with the surpassing glory. And if what was transitory came with glory, how much greater is the glory of that which lasts? So Paul is preaching the glory of the new covenant over the old, the new way of relating with God over the old way of relating with God, to God. Jesus has changed everything. Because he becomes the one for all sacrifice, we're no longer locked into this distant, proxy, sacrificial relationship with God. And we can agree with Paul, can't we? This is much better. It is good news that we don't have to go and slaughter a calf every time we say a rude word. It is good news that we can be in a close relationship with God. It is glorious news, even. So that means we can draw close to God rather than rely on others to do that for us. And when we're in a close relationship with God, when we're talking to him and listening to him and spending time in his presence, then that same kind of transformation that happened to Moses also happened to us. Now, I'm not suggesting at the end of the service, this might happen, I'm not suggesting at the end of the service people's faces will begin to manifest a certain shiny quality. I really hope that happens, though. Paul goes on, verse 12, therefore, since we have such a hope, we are very bold. We are not like Moses, who would put a veil over his face to prevent the Israelites from seeing the end of what was passing away. We're not like Moses, who was embarrassed because people could see the fading glory on his face. We're bold because we know that the glory of God no longer lives on a mountaintop, but within us. We don't put a veil over our faces, metaphorically speaking, because the glory of God in us does not fade away. And Paul now continues. I'm not going to go into every verse. Paul continues by talking about people who misunderstand this. They continue to practice a veiled version of true faith, either one that doesn't acknowledge Jesus at all or one that becomes too reliant on rules and religion. But Paul then says, whenever anyone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. Paul's starting to stretch the veil thing into a bit of a metaphor, symbolizing that old distance between the people and now the ongoing 24/7 access to the glory of God that we can have without that veil. So people still have veiled hearts, he says in verse 15 when Moses is read. But then in verse 16, he tells us that the veil has been removed. When anyone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. The veil from our hearts, the veil from our faces, there are no veils. There are no veils anywhere to be seen. And instead, we find ourselves able to access God directly. Verse 17. Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. So God meets us through his Holy Spirit. So we don't need to worry about being made ceremonially clean or offering sacrifices or going through a proxy, a high priest. We can know God personally through his Spirit, and we're free. We're liberated of all these things. And then, here is the astounding conclusion. This, by the way, is one of those verses you should all write on your... So people over 30... Write this on a piece of paper. I'm over 30. Write this on a piece of paper and stick it to your fridge. People under 30. People under 30 make an Instagram picture of a cloud with this on it. I've got one coming up. And we all, who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory, are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. Bam! It's not a cloud. It's like a sort of shiny thing. So we're not like Moses, who had to cover his face, because the glory within us does not fade. And even more than that, we are all being transformed, all of us, further and further. We're all getting brighter, not duller. Moses was like a sort of 40-watt bulb, and he slowly, the energy would drip away. But we are constantly making our way towards 100 watts. As God lives in us by his Spirit, we are being transformed more and more. Isn't that a mind-blowing encouragement? That God is refining us more and more into his own likeness. I don't know about you, sometimes I can feel like I'm not great at being a Christian. I'm not great at reflecting the glory of God to others. Sometimes I feel like I'm not changing at all. I'm actually getting worse. I'm moving further away from God. I'm backsliding, as we used to say in the Baptist church I grew up in the 90s. We say backsliding anymore, Phil? I'm glad of that. Even those of us who maybe feel like, sometimes we feel like we're displeasing God. Well, this verse says that we're all being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory. I like that phrase, ever-increasing. It's like it makes me think of a balloon that just keeps inflating and doesn't burst. God's glory in you keeps brightening. Maybe for some of us it's happening at different speeds, but we are all slowly getting brighter. We're all reflecting the glory of God a little bit more each day. So that then takes us back to my opening question. As a Christian, do you look different to anyone else? Well, that might be the sort of question that immediately you sort of think, oh, I have to do some soul searching now. And now I have to reflect on how bad and guilty I am, how rubbish I am at being a Christian. No, I don't reflect Christ very well to the people in my community or even my family. But that's not what 2 Corinthians 3 seems to say. You don't have to feel like you've got something to prove. Verse 17 says, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And I think that's what this passage is about. Like, guys, we should be freed of this stuff. This passage is still, though, an invitation to join in with the change. It still gives us something to work on. And if we look again at verse 18, Paul describes God's people like this. He says, we all, who with unveiled faces all reflect the Lord's glory, contemplate the Lord's glory. Hang on, that's not on there. Okay, it should be there. It says actually in the actual verse, not in my Instagram version. There we go. We all who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory. We join in with that process of being made brighter and more radiant. And our part in it is to contemplate the Lord's glory. Now that is quite a countercultural thing to say in an age of activism and doing stuff and an age of distraction when 5 seconds of silence means we're going to get our mobile phones out. If we were to think about how we would think it was best to reflect God better to our friends and neighbors, we'd probably come up with a list of things that you would do, kind acts that you'd perform and so on. But the offer here, if we want to be transformed into the reflective likeness of God, is not about doing anything. The offer is to contemplate. It's what Christians have done, actually, for generations, for centuries, up until the world got so busy. It's what those who live the monastic lifestyle still do today. So here's a different question. How much time do you spend contemplating the Lord's glory? How much time in the last week have you spent contemplating? How much time in the last month, in the last year, have you quietly sat and rather than filling your relationship with God with your own words, simply thought about him, reflected on him, allowed him to show you things about himself? How crazy is it that we're allowed to spend unveiled time with the creator of the universe, and all we tend to do is tell him how stressed we are about school places or that argument we had at work? Not those things aren't important, but maybe they lack a little bit of perspective. So what I would like us to do now, as we come to the end, is just spend a few moments practically doing that together. Introverts, rejoice. Extroverts, like me, don't panic. We're going to spend just a few moments in silence together. And we're going to reflect together on the glorious truth about God that we learnt in this passage. And I'm going to put a few words on the screen. And I'm just going to invite you, just read them, allow yourself to reread them, let them sink in and speak to you. They're from the Message paraphrase. They're from the same passage we've read this evening. So contemplate, let's contemplate together the glory of God. Let's contemplate the Lord's glory, what he's done to step towards us, to come down the mountain through Jesus, and by his Spirit live with us. Let's contemplate the Lord's glory and be transformed. Our lives gradually become brighter and more beautiful as God enters our lives and we become like him. The natural tendency in all of us is to, in a very busy world, to try and do stuff, to become more like Jesus. But actually, our lives become brighter and more beautiful as God enters our lives. We make that time and space simply to contemplate the glory of the Lord, to be quiet, to listen, to contemplate, to meditate. If we want to keep getting brighter, to join in with and perhaps even hasten that transformation, we need to do what Moses did and spend time in his presence. Perhaps a thought to take away. I think if you boil this passage down to just a few words, embarrassingly for me, it was all very simple in the end. Looking more like Jesus to our friends and neighbors isn't achieved through doing good works or keeping the laws, but by spending time with God. We reflect him more when we reflect on him more. So I wonder if we can to spend a bit more time in his presence together.